Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. My name is Tom Tuttle Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor and resiliency expert, helping people to think, speak, and act positively through the challenges of life. You can find out more about me in this interview at my website, which is tall.com. My guest today is Sabrine Schleza. She was named one of the top 2014 top female entrepreneurs in Canada, and she's been on this list 10 times in the past years. She is one of three partners of Schleza Saddlery Service, and they've been manufacturing English riding saddles in Canada since 1986. They specialize in saddles made for women, especially for recreational and amateur riders who care about comfort for themselves and protection for their horses' backs. They have had numerous business and industry awards and were featured twice on Discovery Channel and also in the Wall Street Journal. Sabrine was awarded Exporter of the Year from the Organization of Women in International Trade in Toronto, and she worked for NASA during the Space Lab years in the late 70s as a liaison between the U.S. Aeronautical Engineers and the European Space Agency engineers through the American Consulate in Germany. She and her husband were just awarded 2014 Entrepreneurs of the Year at the Business Excellence Awards from the Newmarket Chamber of Commerce. And for those who don't know, Newmarket is near Toronto, a fairly big city. Welcome to the show today, Sabrine.
Thank you, Tom. It's Sabina, by the way.
Sabina. There you go. See, I got the last name, and then I screwed up the first name.
That's usually the hard one.
Yeah, that's usually the hard one, because if people see how it's spelled, it's like, Sabina. So there we go. It's a mistake to start off the show. But as I was telling you before the show, both of my sisters rode horses a lot. Competitions, they got ribbons on their walls when they were kids. And one of the things I had to do to get the car on a Saturday night was drive my sisters to muck out the stalls for the shows and clean up the horses and get everything ready for shows. And so I remember vividly how early they had to get up and how excited they were and how often they went. And so it's a pretty cool industry.
I had to do that too for my husband when he was competing. We used to get up at 4 in the morning. I had to braid his horse and, clean him, muck out the stalls and get him ready at the trailer to wherever the competition he was in at the time. So
right.
I know your pain.
And my sister did it for no money. I think they got to ride for free, so that seemed to excite them a lot. But it's like, wow, I'm driving my sister, who I really don't want to spend half an hour in the car with, to go so she can go clean up poop for the morning. It's like, wow, interesting dynamics it was, so I could get the car. So very cool. And now, from reading about you, your husband is just as famous as you are, and has done some amazing things on his own and got some great awards as well. So brag on him a little bit as well. And you can pronounce his name, because it seems like it's a, I don't want to screw up another name.
His name is Jochen Schleza, and yes, he's actually the very famous face of the company. He's the one who's out there all the time. He's actually known worldwide in this industry as one of the premier authorities on the topic of saddle fitting. And now that he's just finished his first book, came out in 2012 in Germany, and I translated it for the North American market last year. It's called Suffering in Silence: The Physical and Psychological Saddle Fit Link to Trauma in Horses. So The Saddle Fit Link to Physical and Psychological Trauma in Horses. That's the actual title. And it came out last year. It's actually available on Amazon as well, and it's done really well. It's basically considered a bestseller. I think once it hits 5,000, that's considered a bestseller in Canada. And it's going into its second printing this spring, so we're really excited about that. And I tell you, that first royalties check, even though it was, small, you don't make money on these books, but it was just so cool. We actually framed it.
Right. I have two coming out in January, and, I've heard the same thing, don't go buy a new Cadillac right away or anything yet, but, they said it's very nice to have these checks come in. It's like, oh, wow, cool, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
And 5,000, that is a bestseller in Canada.
Yeah, Yeah, and we're, well, actually 5,000 is North America, and most of our clients are in the States, so I'm thinking that probably most of the books got sold down there. But anyways, the point is that it's going into a second printing, and that's very cool. And actually, I'm in the process of writing a business book. I'm basically mistakes I've made in business and the things I've learned from them sort of thing, that kind of a
slant
to it, all anecdotal, and I've made a lot of mistakes, so it's going to be a big book.
Wow. And it goes so along with my theme of life is helping people to live positively through the challenges of life, because none of us are going to escape them. Some of them are going to be business challenges, relationship challenges, money challenges. There's like a gazillion different challenges. And if you can learn from someone else's mistakes, you can be like, at least I didn't have to make that mistake on my own.
Exactly. And I think it really is only a negative mistake if you don't learn from it. So I'm hoping that the lessons that I've learned from the mistakes that I've made will help some other young entrepreneur avoid them. And I think back when we began our company, you know, we did so much what we've accomplished by trial and error and mistakes, and learning from them. There was no mentorship programs at the time and all of these, you know, really great coaching networks that are available now. None of that was available back then. Back in 1992, the Federal Business Development Bank, which is now the Business Development Corporation of Canada, they set up this program called Step Up or Step Ahead for women business owners mentoring other women business owners. And I actually applied for that, and I applied with the intent of being a protege to someone. And because of the level of accomplishments that we'd have been in business for 6 years, we'd already started exporting and stuff, I was asked to be a mentor. So I kind of was forced in that role, but it was great because I learned from my protégés as much as they hopefully learned from me as well. So it was, you know, a win-win situation, and I love those kinds of relationships. I'm still involved with mentoring, even through our local chamber, and I just think it's really rewarding to be able to give back and teach, you know, the lessons that I've learned.
Right. And think of the difference it can make, because not only do you impact that person you're mentoring, but it could impact their spouse, their family, their kids, their finances, their life in so many ways. And helping them avoid some of those mistakes is, wow, that's taking a lot of stress out of people's lives, and just sharing that with them, so amazing. Now, now you guys specialize in saddles made especially for women. And so when I think of business as a whole, I think, okay, maybe the saddle market is not a ginormous business. Maybe it is a ginormous business.
It is.
But
it's a $16 billion industry.
How much?
Equestrian industry. $16 billion. That's the equestrian industry as a whole, not just the saddle market, but, you know, everything to do with horses. So it's a pretty significant amount of market that's available out there.
But when you focus especially on women, you're cutting it in half. So how did you come to that decision and that realization that was the direction that really you should take?
Well, the way it works is that in this industry, traditionally, saddles have always been made by men for men, and specifically in what we specialize in, which is dressage, which is sort of the basis, the basic gymnastics of the horse, which is sort of it doesn't matter what discipline you're in, you have to do this what we call groundwork to have, you know, that kind of connection with your horse. And we started getting orders for custom saddles pretty much right after we came to Canada in 1986. And my husband would always say, you know, try this out. This is a great saddle. Try it out. It fits great. And I would sit on it and was like, I didn't really want to tell them, but they weren't always that comfortable. And then it was, you know, it's the old thing. When someone close to you tells you something is wrong, you go, you discount it. But then you hear the same thing from outside, all of a sudden it's, great idea, you know. So what happened was that basically one of these very significant riding judges was a client of ours and confided in my husband that she was basically being rubbed bloody by her saddle. And this became pretty much a repeat chorus. We were hearing it more and more and more, and so we decided to come up with this plaster cast method where we actually took a plaster cast of your nether regions. We would have women sit in these plaster casts, and we call them butt casts, and we could see actually, and he could tell for the first time why the saddles that he was making were not really working out for women, because when you look at the anatomy of a woman, and it's such a duh thing, you think somebody else would have thought of this by now, our pelvises are built differently than a man's. Obviously,
of
we're
course.
Childbearing.
Right.
For a man to sit perfectly straight in dressage, you know, you want your shoulders, hips, heels, classic line from top to bottom,
mm-hmm.
straight line.
Mm-hmm.
As a woman, it hurts to sit on your pubic symphysis, and we
mm-hmm.
can't balance just on our seat bones. So we're sitting on a three-point, like a tripod, rather than a bipod,
right.
which a man is sitting on, just the seat bones.
Right.
And it hurts to sit there, so you collapse at the hip. You start accommodating a poorly fitting saddle, a gender inappropriate saddle, we call
right.
it.
Right.
By slouching.
Overcompensating some areas.
Back.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know all these things that are going on and causing long-term damage to yourself, constant
right.
bladder infections, you know, just sore backs, lumbar problems, slip discs, backaches, and the saddles are built so that your hips are being pulled apart. All these things were never taken into consideration. So we decided to design our saddles specifically for women, and we took all of these anatomical requirements into consideration. So we've
right.
become known as the female saddle specialist.
Wow.
So we
and like you can
for men.
Right, but the sounds like the key market would be that women, and it makes sense because in this day and age, ergonomic chairs, they really know the science of these various things, and must be kind of different technology available now that you could have analyzed and said, wow, look at where they're sitting, look at how this works. And it must have been kind of cool to come to this realization that, wow,
yeah,
like we might be the only ones looking at this.
We were constantly innovating and evolving our models as well. And it's funny that you say ergonomic chairs and stuff, because we've actually coined the term saddle ergonomist. We teach courses pretty much all over the world through our daughter company called Saddle Fit for Life, which is a purely educational arm of the company. And we've come up with a 5-day curriculum that has been endorsed by the United States Dressage Federation, the Certified Horsemanship Association, the Ontario Equestrian Federation, the German National Riding School, and the Professional Association of Trainers in Germany. Because it is such a crucial part of performance for horse and rider. The saddle needs to be gender appropriate. It needs to fit not only the horse, but also the rider. So we take all of these things into consideration and use the saddle as an interface to make the two work together.
Wow. So you might have someone, a woman, who has the top part customized, but it would also need to be customized based on what horse she's riding as well. I hadn't even thought of the reverse customization, but horses are different sizes.
That's something that has always been done, was considered first, was that the saddle should fit the horse. And a lot of people
right.
say, well, I don't really care if the saddle fits me as long as my horse is comfortable. The problem is
right.
that if you're not comfortable as a rider, you know, horses can feel the tiniest fly landing on. You may have all seen like this little flick of the skin when a fly lands on the horse.
Right.
And it will know when the saddle doesn't fit you, when you're uncomfortable as a rider. This discomfort is going to translate down through the horse and make him unable to perform properly or to his
right.
best potential. So these are all things that you need to take into consideration. And so many of the, what we call these behavioral issues, which have become part of the mainstream media, there's people talking about, oh, my horse is stubborn, my horse won't move forward, my horse won't do this, my horse won't do that. A lot of times, like we also work closely with a lot of veterinarians and other equine professionals, chiropractors, physiotherapists. They deal with issues that could arise from something as simple as a saddle not fitting properly. And, you know, so we're teaching them to take a look at that first. And that's all part of this ergonomics training, to be
right.
able to do an analysis. And we've actually come up, we have an 80-point analysis that we do. This is how we actually sell. We go and we have these really great organizers all over North America with whom we work, that pull together a group of 20, 30, 40 people at their barns,
right.
and then we come in, we fly in with our saddle fit technicians. We're basically commuting all over North America and do these week-long clinics, they're called. And that's basically, our business is all very custom, very one-to-one.
Right.
So it's you know, I think
wow.
that one's even more remarkable that we've reach the level of growth and success that we have when you think of it, that it's really all done without a distribution network of, you know, retailers. We work
right.
with the end consumer.
And it's not a an assembly line. You're customizing each one.
And it's almost like we see probably with all of our staff probably 6,000 horses a year.
Wow.
So we have a huge database of you know, issues and various permutations of saddle fit that we can call
right.
on. And one of the good things
wow.
is, I write articles for probably about 14 to 15 different equine media publications.
Right.
Because it's
right.
very important to keep your name in the public eye, to be known as the expert, you know?
Of course. I'm in the business of personal development. Yeah, I just recently became a resiliency expert because someone told me I needed to be an expert. So I was like,
what's a resiliency expert?
Well, I've been in hospital 40 times and had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced. So I think resilience is what it takes just to keep going. And I have pain
wow.
from head to toe. My arthritis affects every joint from my jaw to my toes. So since the age
goodness.
Of 5, I haven't had 1 minute of no pain. So someone said, okay, Tom, you're a resiliency expert. I'm like, okay, yeah, I got to be an expert, like you said. But now this is another thing that's so cool about the internet is that instead of the old days of my sisters, I used to think they were like wimps because the next day they would be moaning and groaning. And, of course, someone who's in pain like me thinks anyone who's moaning and groaning is a wimp because I never say anything. So I'd be like, I wonder why they're always complaining about how sore they are and how painful it is. And
well,
so
it's probably because they were riding in the wrong saddle. Now
exactly, and they're small. So it was days after the show or day after the show, and they would be complaining. And I used to wonder, like, what the heck is wrong with them? And they're young, so they're probably not have really ill-fitting saddles. But in this day and age, you can look up on the internet anything. And so $16 billion industry, you know, people are looking up proper fitting saddles and this kind of education that they can get online. And so it's good for you to be out there and making people aware, because man, you could suffer like health concerns that could be long term. You get a bad back, that's going to be with you for a long time, and if you could have corrected that with a proper saddle, that's a good education.
Well, that's the whole philosophy behind Saddle Fit for Life, which is a separately incorporated entity. It's a global network of equine professionals all working together to protect horse and rider from long-term back damage, horses as well as riders. You know, so it is very, very important that if you want to do this for a long time, you need to make sure that you're covering yourself. And we find it's really quite paradoxical. We love to work with mainly adult amateur riders, and the demographics in the industry have changed a lot. It's in the last 50 years, it's really swung over to the female side. Like, most of our clients are women. I would say probably 95% of our clients are women.
Wow.
And especially in this industry, most of them are women. As you go into
mm-hmm.
Western and you know, into the jumping markets, there's more men. But specifically in the dressage, there's mainly women riding because it's
right.
something that they can do, you know, when their husbands are out on the golf course, the babies or the kids are off at school, and
yeah.
they become empty nesters. These are baby boomers who have a lot of discretionary income and some time on their hands. They may have ridden when they were younger, or they may have just
right.
started riding because it's something to do.
My
their
sister
friends
just
doing
bought
it.
A horse or her daughter.
And their horses are their babies, you know, and they
right.
want to do what's right for it. But oftentimes they just don't know what they just don't know, you know. It's
right.
So it's very, very rewarding to work with people who are open to learning and who are open to doing what's right for their horse. And, you know, sometimes I think it's very much an altruistic business. My husband is most happy when his clients basically have tears in their eyes and thank him from the bottom of their hearts for the difference he's made in their horses.
Right.
You know, and he does what he needs to do to make the horse and rider happy.
Wow. Now, in what I teach, Napoleon Hill's success principles, the number one success principle is definiteness of purpose. And when you know your purpose, like sounds like you and your husband know your purpose, and when you just described that he's just as happy to get a tearful hug and saving someone from pain, naturally profit will follow or revenue will follow from that. But when he gets more joy from that, you've obviously, the two of you, found your purpose in this business.
Well, it's very much my husband's passion. I mean, it's his passion to help as many horses and riders as he can worldwide, and he recognizes that he's only got two hands and can't do everything, which is why he's now training the trainers sort of thing. You know, we're trying to expand and getting more people in the Saddle Fit for Life organization who are at least in alignment with the philosophy. And, I mean, it's really interesting how the industry has shifted over the last 30 years since we've been in business. When we first came over to Canada in 86, my husband was asked to be the official saddler for the World Dressage Championships. They were held for the first time outside of Europe. And when we came here, we found saddles were very much commodities. They were used, abused, broken. Nobody was here who could really fit them, who could repair them. And nobody really cared that much whether or not they completely fit or not. So we've changed the way people have to sell saddles here. I mean, nobody used to go out to the barns and actually measure horses and measure the rider and all that. Now almost every saddle company does that. And, you know, the competition is not sleeping. And it's really interesting how we're being imitated left, right, and center. Our ads are being copied. What we say is being copied.
Yeah.
Maybe paraphrased a little bit, but it's rewarding on the one hand and very flattering, and it's great because basically it is for the good of the horse, and we have to keep that in mind. And, I mean, actually what we're trying to do is we've organized, we have a foundation that we started in California. My husband and two of our associates, one is a trainer, one is a veterinarian. It's called HIPPO, which is Horse Industry Professionals Protecting Our Horses.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in online, it's hippofoundation.org. And there are some really cool videos there of what it is that we do. We're actually trying to sell it out as a reality TV program, kind of like the Extreme Makeover, the Horse Edition.
Right.
We take horses that have been having problems, some of these behavioral issues that I talked about, and they'll be put into training. They'll work with a veterinarian, and they'll work with a saddle fitter to fix the issues.
One of the guys I interviewed for the radio show, he's a producer of he is in the middle of production of a reality show right now. And so I'm going to email him and see what he might think of this idea.
Awesome.
Because, last time I wanted to get together with him, he's like, no, I'm sorry, I'm filming a reality show. But what an amazing way to educate people this would be to do that. And what a great foundation. So HIPPO, it's not just HIPPO. It has an H on the end, doesn't
it? H on the end, yep. Horse Industry
Foundation.
Professionals Protecting Our Horses. Foundation. HIPPOFoundation.org, yes.
.org. Wow, that sounds like it's going to make going to educate a lot of people. Now, I was thinking as well, like you just mentioned about measuring the horse, like surely if the ergonomics of measuring the rider, you must be able to make with the technology and the science to analyze it, you must be a way more comfortable ride for a horse this day than it used to be, where it's just slap this one on that horse over there. You must be able to really make maybe not a pillow top mattress type experience, but it must be much nicer with what you have available now for a horse than it used to be 30 years ago.
Well, it all depends. You see, this is a very traditional industry as well, and a lot of the companies still use the old traditional English spring trees, which are made in England, which are basically 16 layers of laminated wood. They have, they're not ergonomically designed, I have to tell you. They have forward-facing tree points, which can impact the shoulder cartilage every time the horse moves it. They don't have the ability to be adjusted. Our saddle trees, which is sort of like the chassis of the saddle, can be adjusted over the course of the horse's life. We consider our saddles an investment. They're not very inexpensive, but they are absolutely inexpensive when you consider you're saving vet bills, you're saving having to buy a new saddle every couple of years, because your horse will change. It's like when you exercise, you know your body changes. When you don't exercise or when you eat more or whatever, your body changes. And most horses are actually muscled much more strongly on the left. Most horses are what we call left-handed, just like most people are right-handed. But the point is that the left-handed shoulder on the horse, left or right, whatever. Anyways, most of them are asymmetric.
Right.
And the saddle tree needs to accommodate this asymmetry, because even though a saddle might look like it's fitting when its horse is standing still, it has to work when the horse is moving. We call this dynamic fit, and not many people can do that either. Not many people have the tools to do it. Not many people have the materials in the saddles to be able to adjust them properly. We adjust asymmetrically to fit the bigger shoulder so that when the horse moves in a saddle that has not been adjusted, the saddle will start twisting to the right.
Right.
This can cause all sorts of problems. The rider will become crooked and accommodate this, try to compensate this crookedness. The saddle will hit the sacroiliac joint. It will hit the nuchal ligament, and it will cause, usually on the opposite side, the right hind is usually the problem because the horses are muscled more strong in the left. It'll cause hock issues and symptomatic lamenesses, and there will be bucking, and there will be stumbling, and there will be tripping, and there may be rearing, all sorts of neat things that happen there because the saddle doesn't fit. And what's also interesting is the fact that the stallion bites the mare over on the trapezius, on the neck, when he's going to mount her.
Right.
And if the saddle pinches there, the instinct for the mare is to stand still, drop her back, and rotate her pelvis in preparation for mating. If you've got a saddle that pinches there, you're causing the same instinctive reflex of the horse. And the rider's on top saying, why won't my horse go forward? And using the spurs and the whip and everything, whereas the instinct is for the horse to stand still.
Wow. Nobody figured out
this. Horses were never meant to be ridden. We force this on them. And so horses are prey animals, and their instinct is to run. And then all of a sudden they've got this thing on their back, which goes against their very nature, you know? It's quite interesting psychology to think about.
Amazing. And I don't hear the word sacroiliac used very often, but I've had four hips replaced. And what the pain I felt was in my sacroiliac, apparently, more than in my hip. And it is an excruciating pain that you would think, that doesn't feel like my hip. It feels like behind my hip. But how can such a small joint be so excruciatingly painful?
Yes. Well, then you understand what the horses are going through.
Exactly. And then asymmetrical, almost everybody. If you go to the gym, talk to a few people, like, hey, I can lift 5 pounds heavier with this arm than that arm. And so even people, almost all of them are asymmetrical, stronger on one side than another.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so interesting to learn that. And now, obviously, you guys are experts at saddles, but then you also had to be business people as well. And one of the cool things you did, because, you know, other professional sport, a big sport, you're in a sport, really, industry, they would go out and get just the biggest name riders and say, here's some money. Can you just tell people how great our saddles are? But you decided to do a grassroots approach, except for one exception, and I will let you pronounce her name. But that was must have been an interesting decision to make, to not go out and just throw money at the biggest names in the industry to get promotions for your saddles.
Well, I'm going to be rude here. We call these top riders sometimes saddle whores because they will go with whoever pays the most money. Not necessarily even that they use the product to ride in when they're actually training and stuff. And it's just, we decided, you know, first of all, other companies can afford to do this because their saddles are made, first of all, mostly not in North America, and second of all, on an assembly line basis, and they're not in any way customized as to any degree how ours are. So they can afford that. You know, they're paying maybe $800-$900 for their saddle at the end of the day, and ours cost 3 or 4 times that much just to make them. So we don't have that great a margin to be able to give that kind of stuff away, for one thing. The other thing is that, like I said, I'm very loath to spend $50,000, $60,000 a year on promoting some top guy who essentially, you know, people might buy the saddle because so-and-so rides in it. But if you have time, go to YouTube. There's a 3-minute video that we made. It's called Red Shoes and Saddle Fitting. And basically the concept is that my husband walks in the barn wearing these red high-heeled pumps. It's funny, I got them on a transsexual website or transvestite website. But it's become part of our branding. We have the little red high heel in our ads and stuff, and people say, oh, what's with the red shoe? And he comes in and he basically says, oh, what? You're laughing at me. She says, don't you like my new shoes? My best friend wears them. She says they fit everywhere, go with everything. They look great on her. She, you know, she looks fabulous when she wears them. And the point is that just because your trainer or somebody else says, oh, this is a fantastic saddle, it may not be right for you, and it may not be right for your horse. So you have
and you
to
may not know the motive of the guy telling you that it's, or the woman telling you it's the best saddle. If I'm being paid to say something, I may
say
it.
Rewarding your salespeople or your ambassadors is pretty much standard in the industry, which is fine. There's nothing really wrong with that.
Right.
But, to pay somebody, and I'm talking really big bucks here, to say in every ad, this is the best saddle on the market, that's just BS. I'm sorry. It just makes no sense. And these people, honestly, they have so many helpers and so many opportunities at their fingertips. It's the backyard rider, the grassroots amateur rider, who totally, her horse is her life. She loves them like pets, a part of the family.
Right.
And they truly care about making a difference with what they're doing with their horses. It's a different story with the top riders. They're more in it for, they want the results. And
yeah, it's a
our
career.
Logo for Hippo, our Hippo logo is also horses first, ribbon second.
Exactly. And you were speaking earlier to a demographic like my youngest sister. She just bought a horse like last year. She has a young daughter. And when I hear how well they treat that horse, it's like, wow, this is like, that's how I treat my dogs. They're going out and feeding them organic food. Or a boy or a girl, I don't know what it is, feeding it organic food and just spending a lot of time with it. It's like, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's they're part of the family, and it's important that that's what we've recognized. These are the people who, honestly, they'll come to a saddle fitting. They'll say, "Okay, my budget is $1,000," and at the end of the day, they're writing a check for $7,000 without batting an eye because they understand the why. And my husband's favorite thing is always people who understand the why will always follow the people who sell the how.
Right. And there was another sales trainer I love, Zig Ziglar. Would ask people, is it the price that you're worried about or the cost? The price could be you could buy a $900 saddle, but the cost, what is the cost of your health? What is the cost of your horse's health? What is the cost of your long-term health and all the various problems that could come from that? So you pay price one time. Or is it going to cost you over a long period of time? And so, as you say, with an adjustable saddle, when you get older, you may get fatter, skinnier, or shorter, or all kinds of dimensions could change. And so when you really care about the horse, and if you've got your daughter starting to ride a horse, and you're talking about the long-term health of your young daughter, my sister would walk out of there with two of them because she could afford it, and she would see the value of paying that much more for the lifetime value of a saddle and the lifetime value of her and her daughter.
Well, we've actually done the net present value calculation of it, whether you buy a $2,000 saddle and recognize that you have to buy a new one every 2 to 3 years as your horse changes conformation. Because the horse will change drastically probably through the first 10 years of its life, or you buy a $7,000 saddle and pay the adjustment fee every year, like with a car, you have to do oil change and everything else. At the end of the day, and then you take the difference in money that you would have paid for the saddle and invest it for the life of the saddle, which was, say, like 10, 15 years, and you come out several thousands of dollars ahead of the game.
Wow, and when that's only where the one-to-one sales associates can really explain that. A short clip in a advertising that's where you're paying a big bucks for is not going to be able to explain the value of your health and your horse's health and your daughter's health and the long-term value of a saddle rather than buying five of them. You're only going to be buying one, and the humaneness of it all, the science behind it all, that can only be done one-on-one from even maybe a woman who's ridden on those crappy saddles who can say, have you ever had like a bladder infection? Probably these conversations don't just happen in a coffee shop, right? So an experienced rider would be like, oh, yeah, like I had. Is that because of the saddle? And it's only one-to-one like that where they can really explain, well, let me tell you about the science behind it and the lifetime value. And that's where it must be the most effective to be sold, because even just on the phone here and having her, it lived it with my sisters years ago and my sister now, I could see, like, if one of your sales associates sat with my sister, that checkbook would be out. And it would make, there would be no question at all.
No.
Yeah, she's in New Hampshire. You sell down in the States?
Oh, of course, yes. We have tons of clients down in the States. Actually, I said about 70% of our business is down in the States. And it's interesting. We actually work with a lot of body workers, human body workers, physiotherapists, massage therapists, chiropractors, who...
Wow.
Oftentimes, you know, especially in this area, New York region, we're the horse capital of Canada, they deal with clients who are having problems because of the fact that they're riding in gender inappropriate saddles, and oftentimes the physiotherapists don't know this. You know, they're dealing with whatever lumbar problems or subluxations or whatever, and they don't know the questions to ask because they don't even think about, oh, maybe this is caused because you're riding in a saddle that's not right for you. So we educate them as well. And it's really quite cool because they can take part of these training courses. We have like either a one-day course or a five-day course for an equine ergonomist, and then go on to be a saddle ergonomist. And they actually can do a diagnostic and get paid for it, you know, add a little extra to their income.
Every income stream for them and a valuable service as well. And an education that, 20 years ago, they never would have thought to ask. They would just
refer them.
And refer them to someone appropriate and help them out, really, truly help them out, rather than just say, come back twice a week for the next 38 years.
Exactly.
But really go help them out. And so, wow, that must have been a cool, this probably doesn't sound like a marketing strategy. Probably sounds like just something you came across. That wow, a lot of people we talk to are treating our women riders with this, and so there's a whole industry treating the pain that comes from riding.
Yeah.
And so,
wow,
what a cool realization. Well, I'll say the name right this time, Sabina. We could go on forever because this is kind of interesting. I didn't think I'd be this interested in the saddle industry, but I did have two sisters in it and one still in it and now teaching her daughter about riding. And so I'll be sure to let them know about it. And so fascinating because it is so nice to talk to people who love what they're doing. They found their purpose and passion in life. I'm sure you know lots of people go to work without going to something that's their purpose and their passion. And
well,
so
I have to say that
we're
very, very lucky in our staff. I would say that every single person that works for us, most of them are riders themselves, and everyone who works for us is really passionate. They all go way above and beyond anything that they have to do, and I mean, they're just the most fantastic group of people, really. They all care, and they're all really proud to be involved in something that really makes such a difference in our industry. So, yeah, you're right. And I always say that if you really love what you do, you'll never work another day in your life.
Right. And people are longing for this. They're longing for something like that. And we could have a whole other discussion on working with your spouse. Some people would be in favor of that. Some people would not be in favor of it for various reasons.
It works actually quite well because our business partner used to be our bank manager. We hired him away from the bank almost 20 years ago. And we basically... there's four of us. He and his wife. His wife is our marketing director, and the four of us work very well together. He's our CEO. My husband is in outside sales and R&D, and Kathy's wife is in marketing. So those two are the very creative ones, and Earl and I are sort of the administrators and you know, more business people. So it works out well because we don't really work with our spouses.
Right, exactly, because you all have separate areas of expertise.
Yeah, and my husband is traveling so much anyway that I very rarely see him. Like, he literally is home maybe on average 6-7 days a month.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So you
work.
Have to give up a few. You have to give up a few things in order to achieve the results you have. And so, if you love what you're doing, it's, you don't always feel like you're giving anything up.
Yeah, and truthfully, I'm always so busy that I don't even have time to miss him. So that all works out well. Then when he comes home,
right.
It's great because it's like, you know, we don't see each other very often. That's probably why we've been married almost 30 years.
Right, right. There's probably women going to listen to this, be like, wow, that could work really well.
Yeah. And when he comes home, he totally disturbs my routine. So it's like, when
right, doing? Right. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, fascinating. Company you have, Sabina, and to be on that top 100 female entrepreneurs 10 times. I didn't even realize that till you had mentioned it. So all the other research I did, I was impressed, mostly Discovery Channel and the other one, Wall Street Journal. That was kind of caught my eye. But to be on that list 10 times, very impressive, and I can see why. And I'm looking forward to the book, because I love reading about people's mistakes, because once they get to the top female entrepreneur list, people think, well, they mustn't have had very many problems. Look at them. They're so successful. But your book is going to let them know not always so.
It took a while to get there, yes.
Right, and so persist. If it's something you love doing, it's your passion anyway, just keep
yep.
going and keep going.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, amazing. Thanks so much for being with me tonight, Sabina. Nighttime here in Toronto, but boy, you got me really interested in an industry I really didn't know a lot about before. I was impressed with your business acumen, but now I can see that there's a lot of passion that goes into creating the right saddles for the right people and the right horses.
Well, thank you for your time, Tom. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Take care.